everybody, and welcome to the Row by Row Garden Show. We're super excited to have you with us this evening. We've got a great show planned. I'm Travis.
And I'm Greg.
And got a lot of good things for you tonight. Tonight we're going to be talking about muscadines, which are kind of a staple of the South, and going through all the different varieties and some stories from the past, and just a little everything about muscadines. And we'll have our show and tell and answer a few of your questions. What are you pouring up over there?
Well, me and we're doing muscadines, and I thought I would show people a little bit about some of the juice we make. And we do ferment some of it. And then a little later on, I thought I'd give a lesson on how you eat a muscadine, because there's proper techniques to doing that, and there is repercussions of doing it the wrong way.
Okay. So that's some... bronze muscadine.
This here is muscadine wine. We got about 25 gallons of brewing right now, and we make a lot of wine. A lot of the primitive Baptists in our area like to use real wine for their communion. Now, I'm pretty sure they don't use a red solo cup, but they do use the real wine. Now, your Southern Baptists won't use real wine. They're going to use grape juice.
Right.
But if you go back into the Bible, it talks about wine a lot in the Bible.
Yeah. You know the difference between a Baptist and a Methodist, don't you?
Yeah, that's good stuff, right? What's the difference in the Methodist?
Methodist will speak to you at the liquor store.
Oh, Baptist won't, huh? Nah. He just pretend like he don't know. Yeah. Okay.
All right. And so before we dive deep into the muscadine thing, is that good?
That's good stuff.
That's good. Before we dive deep into that, let's talk a little bit, some show and tell, which we don't have a lot to show, but we got a lot to tell. Got a lot going on. We're planting for fall right now, and we just put out a 2-minute tip on Tuesday, planting our pole beans and our Christmas Lima running butter beans, and those are coming up about that. That big just coming out of the dirt. Mm-hmm. Got a real good germination on them, real good stand. The key with that, when you're planting on top of that tape, that buried tape like that, is you want to, when you first plant, you want to run that tape for, I'd say, at least a good 4 or 5 hours.
Oh,
just to soak that seed bed, and you'll get real good germination.
Any of those running butter beans and things like that, you're better off planting them in springtime. That way you can get 2 or 3 crops off of them.
Yeah, now they'll... They won't do nothing in the heat of summer, but yeah, they'll come back.
They'll throw them blooms off when it's hot and dry, and then you just take care of them, talk to them real sweet, and they'll put on another good crop for the fall.
That's right. And I'm really excited about these rattlesnake beans. I've seen them and seen people grow them, but I've never grown them myself. Now, I think they lose their pretty color once you cook them or can them, but they look really pretty on the vine.
Yeah, it's an old heirloom variety, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, and the Christmas Limas, which we've grown several times before, do really well. They're really easy to shell as far as a butter bean goes, and they have kind of a nuttier flavor to them than a green butter bean does. Mm-hmm. They preserve really well, they freeze really well, and they make really good soups.
Yep, and my Seminole pumpkins are doing real good. I planted me a patch of Seminole pumpkins about 5 weeks ago. And they are really doing good. If we got a picture, we can show up here the Seminole pumpkins. Okay, let's show them what we got there. Them things is growing. And I mean, I hadn't had much trouble with mildew, which I normally do yet. So I got my fingers crossed. But I got a real good fruit set on there. And it looks like we're going to have a bumper crop of Seminole pumpkins.
Well, those things are good to eat
yep.
as well. How many pumpkins do you think you get per plant on
average? I don't know. It's going to be a lot. I went out this morning and looked at all the blooms. Them things has got a lot of fruit set on there. More than I can remember having before. Now, they may throw some of them off, but as of right now, we got a lot of them.
And they'll be, well, since those things can cure, we'll have them through October.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be good. And we've got, as far as the expo goes, we got taters planted out there.
Yeah.
Which we'll just stay tuned for how that goes.
Right.
We got some flowers planted out there. We got some few rows of zinnias and few rows of celosia or coxcomb planted.
Yeah.
And we got some cauliflower and
okra.
We got okra planted out there, some red burgundy okra. And we got lots of things in the greenhouse that are ready to go in mm-hmm. this week.
So we're getting full swing at the expo.
full swing. The expo and in our own gardens as well. I've got some lettuce I'm going to try to sneak in succession plant here pretty soon too. All right, now let's get into our tool of the week segment. And if I can get this, this is one of our bigger tool of the week. If I can get this in the frame here. This right here is what we call our Dura-Rake. And some people call this a landscape rake or a bed prep rake or whatever. So this thing, and I can't get the whole handle in the frame.
It's got airplane tube and metal handle on there.
So it's really high quality steel there. Really, really nice design. Simple the way it bolts there, the handle bolts to the frame. You ain't gonna break this one. And this thing works really good, especially this time of year. I'm getting ready to do me a few beds of those Asian mixed greens, those smaller greens, where you want to have your bed prepped real nicely because you're trying to get a real good germination rate on your direct seed. Also for carrots, stuff like that, some of your stuff that you're real particular about your germination, you want to make sure you got that bed prepped nice.
Right, and what I like to do is when I get it just like I want it, I like to flip it over and use that straight edge right there. And that'll make a pretty bed right there on top.
That's right. So those tines will work good. You put your little light layer of compost down. Those are going to work good. Grooving that into your soil a little bit. Then you flip it over like that. Get it nice and smooth. You can run over with your cedar. So this is one of the, before we started carrying a landscape rake or a bed prep rake, we brought in a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the best one we could find right here. We're really happy with it.
You know, I don't think we've ever had a complaint. Not that I know of on them right there. And we've sold hundreds of them.
So check that out right there. The Dura-Rake. And now let's get into our main segment talking about these muscadines. And if, as always, if you have any questions during the show, put those in the comments. We'll be glad to answer them on next week's show. And if we do answer your question, we'll send you something special. How about that? All right. So, first of all, let's talk about varieties. Now, I've seen some muscadines, like we said before, are a staple of the South. They grow native down here. We see wild ones all over the place. But there's a lot of people. It's not uncommon. Every second or third house down the road's got a muscadine. Growing up, seemed like everybody had one.
Yeah.
In their backyard.
Yeah, actually, they can grow in zones 6 through 10 pretty well. So anything from the, I'm gonna say from the mid south, heck, I don't know exactly where, from central United States on down, you can pretty much grow muscadines, and it's a great thing to have in your backyard because they're very low maintenance. Once you get these babies established, you don't hardly have to do anything to them. So it's a good, and it comes in the time of year when everything else is out, so it's great to have. We can go out there and have you a snack because I love to eat them raw to mine.
Yeah, from my research, it seems like the distribution goes anywhere from Florida to, they say, up as north as Delaware.
Yeah, but you have to do them a little bit different when you get it back where you have to bank those. In the wintertime, you have to bank them up a little bit, but they grow better in zones 6 through 10.
Right, right. They're not going to do well with those prolonged cold temperatures.
Yeah.
I've seen some places say there was somewhere around 140 varieties. Some places say
the little native ones or the wild ones that we've got around here that I remember as a boy, and we still got them in the woods, about the size of your thumbnail. Now, they sweet, but they small. There's been a lot of cultivation and hybridization done on these things. And a nursery out of northern Georgia or around Atlanta there called Isom's Nursery has done a lot of work developing new varieties. And we all like the bigger ones for some reason or another. I do too. Now they come, these are the bronze ones. These are my favorite right here.
So, and we got a video coming out on this, I think next week. So at my house, I've got a vine that's about 100 foot long, and it was there before I moved into this place. And it's extreme old vine, big old thick trunks on it, really prolific. And I've got four different varieties out there, four different kind of looking muscadines coming off of it. And I want to show everybody. So the first one's here, and these are probably the most popular ones you'll see around the South. And this is what they call a scuppernong.
Mm-hmm.
And these are these big, we call them bronze ones. They're a little more green than they are bronze. This is probably the most popular one.
That was my favorite right there.
So those are the big bronze ones. And contrast those with these right here, which I've got, which are these small ones.
Mm-hmm.
Now these small ones, they're good to eat, but you got to eat a lot more of them.
Yeah, they grow a lot more of the smaller ones for wine production for some reason.
Now these small ones will grow in these massive clusters. And you basically just get underneath that vine with your picking bucket and just rake them off in there. These do seem to do better for the wine just because they're, you get a lot more of them. If I'm going to eat them, I'd rather have the big one there.
Right.
And then, as far as the, I'm not sure what these are called. I didn't have any funny luck with what those are actually called. And then we've got these right here, which a lot of people like as well, which are these purple ones.
Yep.
And we've got a couple different kind of purple ones. So I've got this real big purple one right here. And best I can tell, this one is called a Cowart.
Cowart. C-O-W-A-R-T?
Right. And that's a real big purple one. It's bigger than a quarter. And then I've got these other purple ones.
Yeah,
they're about half that size. And best I can tell, these are called Noble.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they could be cousins of either of those varieties, but that's my best guess. I don't know if I could tell a difference in taste if I was blindfolded, but I do like those bigger ones there.
Yeah. Now, there's a correct way to eat these things. Now, the way we like to eat them is we like to eat them fresh off the vine. Go out there, and you just stand there for a while, and you eat them. And what you have to do is you have to bite into them, and it's got an inside in there that's full of seeds.
Mm-hmm.
What we do is you bite into it and you get the juice out of it and then you spit the hull out. Then that inside, you got to run it through your teeth there to get them seeds out and then you spit seeds out. Now, what's going to happen if you eat them seeds? Well, my father, a few years ago, ate him a belly full of them and ate them seeds. He didn't spit them out. And he come down with a case of the terrible diverticulitis. Had to end up in the hospital for a few days. Then them seeds got lodged up in his belly. And from there on, we make it a rule around here, you got to spit them seeds out because you don't want to end up down there with no diverticulitis and things get all hung up in there because they can get infected in this bad business. So you want to spit them seeds out, and the only thing you're going to swallow is the juice and that inside in there without the seeds. That is the proper way to eat it, and I will demonstrate right here. Once you bite it on, all that juice will come out of there. Now, if I was outside, I'd be spitting them on the ground, but I'm going to use this right here. Then you take that out. Then you got to run this through your teeth to get those seeds out. Now, it's a little bit of a trick, but once you figure it out, it ain't nothing to it.
It's an acquired skill.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Now, every one of them seeds is going to slap out of it.
Now, didn't you have, well, I don't know if this was a just a story or truth. Didn't you have an uncle have to go get his stomach pumped because he didn't get so many seeds?
I had an uncle that, there used to be these U-pick places around these farms would have 4 or 5 acres of them, and you could go out there and U-pick, and they'd charge you so much pound. But now he did what we call grazing. He would get out there, and he would eat more than what he put in his bucket, and he swallowed him a bunch of seeds, and he ended up having to get his stomach pumped because them seeds got messed up in there. He was being a little bit on the hoggish side there. But that learned him a lesson, too. And after that, he kind of calmed down on swallowing. Them seeds ain't no good to swallow. Now, it looks like it's the right thing to do at the moment because it's easy. But you want to get those seeds out.
That's right. And you have to watch yourself. If you find you a good vine that's loaded down, you can spend 30 minutes out easy eating them things.
Yeah. You can mess up if you eat too many of them. You kind of have to judge yourself a little bit. When you feel like you're getting enough, you need to quit. Because you gorge yourself out, you're asking for trouble on them things.
Yeah. I don't always just pick me a mess of them and go in the house and eat them. Because just like you said, you got to spit them seeds out. It's better just to meddle around.
I like to eat them on the outside, and that way I just go right about my business. And yeah.
All right. Well, and to talk about, kind of wanted to mention this real quick. So the scientific name for muscadines is Vitis rotundifolia, which if we look at what these words mean, it makes plenty of sense. Vitis is the Latin word for vine. Rotund. If something's rotund, what does that mean?
It's round.
It's kind of plump.
Round.
Kind of big. Yeah. And then folia, which kind of refers to foliage. So this is saying a vine with lots of foliage.
Yep.
And that's exactly what a muscadine
is. That's your Latin lesson for today, boys.
That's exactly what a muscadine vine is. And if you don't keep them things trimmed, they will get out of hand on
you. And now we'll probably later on go over into a good session when it's time to do it. Normally about February is when you need to trim them. And we'll do a show on how to properly trim those muscadines, because there is a proper way to doing it.
Well, and that is also going to depend a lot on how old your vines are. With your newer vines, you got to be real particular. There's a certain way you got to do it. You got to leave X amount of growth. Now, with the vines I got, I could get out there with a chainsaw and probably not do a whole lot of damage.
Yeah, but we're going to have to talk about the proper way to do it.
Proper way, that's right. That's right. I was looking on Stark Brothers' site, and they, when they talked about pruning them, they said you should ruthlessly prune them. And I pruned mine back hard last year because they just get... They get so much foliage, I can't get underneath there to find the muscadines or whatever. And I pruned them back hard last year with loppers even. And we had all that rain, and I can't prune them back far enough. They just grow and grow.
There's two different ways you can plant your muscadines. You can plant them in a trellis situation, which way yours is, where you stretch out some high tensile line and you plant them on that high tensile line.
In a straight line.
In a straight line. And that's 90% of the way it's done. However, back in the day, a lot of people used to plant arbors, and they would put 4, 6, 8 posts, whatever, and they would put fence wire on top, and those things would grow on top, and you would go underneath there and reach up and pick them, and that works out great. You don't see that as much anymore. You see it a lot. You underneath the shade, you reach up there and pick them. It's nice to have those arbors. The arbors do not produce as much as the line trellis system does. However, it is nice to be able to go underneath there, and it adds a little bit to your landscape too. So 6 of 1, 1/2 dozen of another. Now let's talk about muscadines, because they need pollinators, and there's some that self-pollinating. And I printed off a little excerpt from the ISOM site. I'm gonna read here to explain just a tad bit of that.
Okay.
Muscadine vines are either female or self-fertile. You plant them 15 to 20 inches apart. Female varieties produce larger and sweeter fruit. Female varieties must be planted within 50 feet of a self-fertile variety for cross-pollination. Female varieties average 50 to 60 pounds per 50 to 60 pounds of fruit per plant. Now here we go. Self-fertile varieties in general produce higher fruit yields. They are self-pollinating, which means they will pollinate themselves and any female muscadine within 50 feet. They recommend planting at least one self-fertile for every 3 female vines. So you need to keep that in mind if you're going to plant some muscadines. Self-fertile muscadines average 60 to 80 pounds of fruit, along with some varieties that even produce more.
So out of those 4 I got, I'm assuming the majority of them are self-fertile.
Right.
But there could be one of them in there that's the female that the other ones are pollinating.
Now, ISOMs, and we'll show a link here on ISOM site, it's got worlds of literature and information on their site. So you can go there and do your research.
And they're located in the South. They know muscadines. They're probably a good go-to source for it.
Now, muscadines are great for making jelly. Of course, making wine. What else can you make out of them?
Well,
I've drank the juice before. We juiced it and just
juice, yeah.
Now, I'm going to tell you a little bit about this wine. To me, it makes one of the best wines out there. It's got, because you can get the hint or the taste of the fruit go through the process, and it actually comes out in the wine. Now, sometimes you have to be careful with this wine, because you'll get what we call the zoomies. Now, the zoomies is your word for the day, and let's put a link up here of zoomies. That way everybody can Google zoomies. It's Z-O-O-M-I-E-S.
Okay.
I didn't know this word existed until yesterday, but my neighbor had got him a pot-bellied pig, and he come over yesterday and said he was building a fence in the backyard because his pot-bellied pig had got the zoomies in the house. And I said, well, what's the zoomies? He said, that's when they go crazy and start running in circles. And I got to thinking to myself, you know, I've had the zoomies before.
Yeah.
I drank too much of this a couple of times and got the zoomies. I didn't know what it was called, but it was the zoomies.
Zoomies.
So don't drink too much of this here, or you will get you a case of the zoomies. But it's good stuff. It's healthy. It's good for you. And it's easy and fun to make.
All in moderation.
All in moderation.
That's right. Before we move on to our questions, I want to touch on one more thing. Because muscadines are native to here, we don't have a lot of disease problems with them. They was actually supposedly, you know, the Spanish settlers who were originally here were growing them, and then when the English settlers moved in, they kind of learned from them how to grow them. But we don't really have to spray them with anything. Now, I've read some things that said when they're young, they can use a little bit of magnesium and boron.
I've heard the old timers talking about putting Epsom salt, magnesium sulfate on them. That they can, I have seen some symptoms of magnesium deficiency in them, but you don't see it a lot. And if you don't have a magnesium deficiency, you're not doing any good there.
Right, right. Because plants only gonna take up so much.
Right.
But we can't grow the traditional like Concord grapes and stuff here because of something called Pierce's disease.
Wipes them out.
And that's transferred by a sap-sucking insect.
Yeah, you know, we've had a big influx in the wine making down here in the last few years. A lot of wineries went up, and a lot of them have tried to grow those grapes, and they have to keep them saturated with fungicides. If they are halfway successful with it, it's only because they spray fungicides on a regular basis, and they just have to stay after it. For the homeowner, you're wasting your time trying to grow you a Concord grape in the South.
Yeah, because you can plant the muscadines. Once they get established, all you got to do is prune them. You ain't got to do nothing else to them. So if you've got muscadines, let us know in the comments there. Tell us what's your favorite variety. I wish I knew what varieties I had, but we'll just have to just enjoy them as they are.
Yeah.
And we've got a neat video coming, I think it's next week, and where we're going to show kind of our... the beginning of our winemaking process, where we start crushing them. We got this little wheel thing that crushes them, and then we got a neat little thing called a bladder press that squeezes the juice out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we got some really good footage of that I think everybody's gonna really enjoy.
Yep.
All right, so now let's get into our Q&A segment this week. And if we answer your question this week, send us your address to CustomerServe@HossTools.com, and we're going to send you a copy of this book right here called Decoding Gardening Advice. And this is a real good book, and this kind of goes in place with what a lot of what we do on this show, where we try to explain old wives' tales and myths and kind of break them down and find the truth there. So a really good book here. We answer your question this week, we'll send you one of these, and then next week's show we'll have another surprise for people who comment on this week's show.
So David Montgomery sent us in a question. I have some Indian corn that I am about to pick for selling at a farmer's market this fall. Do you have any suggestions for keeping the weevils out of it while I store it for a couple of weeks? Well, David, let me tell you a couple things you can do. One of them is if you got room, you can bag it and put it in your freezer, and that'll take care of them. If you leave it in your freezer for 2 or 3 days or a week, that will bust that cycle up on them weevils. That's assuming it's already dry, but it will actually dry it out just a little bit. So if you're not quite at the moisture level you want to be, that freezer will dry it out just a little bit. But you do need it pretty dry before you put it in there. That is the best way. Now, if you do not have room in the freezer, what we have done in our greenhouse, because we don't have a greenhouse full right now, I take my corn and I put it out on top of my wire and I put a fan on it. I can't tell you why, but that seems to take care of the weevil problem for the time being. Now, as soon as we take this stuff and take it out of that situation, the weevils can come back. So it doesn't necessarily bust the cycle, but there's something about that taking the moisture away and putting that fan on there and that heat on that chicken wire that the weevils will stop eating corn. So either one of the two things is what I'd recommend. There's some other options out there. You could fumigate it, but the normal person don't have access to do that. So either put it in your freezer or put it out there on an area that's, make sure it's out of the rain where no moisture get to it. put you a fan on there, and it was some good hot air, and that'll take care of a lot of those weevils, too.
That fan just seems to just deter them.
And it dries your corn out, too, so that's good.
And then once you've got it dry, if it's not already dry like yours, you can go ahead and shell it and put it in the freezer. It's going to take up a lot less
room. Yeah, but that Indian corn, he wants it on the cob, so he can sell it at the farmer.
Oh, I got you. On the cob. I got you. All right. So, David, send us your address, and we'll get that book out to you. And then the last one, we got another question from another David. This is from David H., and he wants to know, you know, we talked a lot about seed trays and planting seeds last week. He wants to know, when using our seed trays, are there certain varieties that we would skip a cell or two to give room for the seedlings without getting leggy or tangled together? And so this is some scarlet kale here. Everybody see that we've got that's ready to go in. And we never skip a cell.
You know, and I can't explain why, Gary, again, but now, if you skip a cell, it seems to make it worse to me than you do if you fill it all the way up.
Well, the problem is going to be you can't fill every other cell with dirt. So you're going to be wasting some potting soil, first of all, if you skip a cell. It's easier to go ahead and plant a whole tray than it is to plant every other one. And you can see these are pretty thick in here, but we can pull them right out of there. And look at there, that's a pretty,
That's just right there.
That's a pretty transplant. See them roots growing down right there?
Yep. That's so the short answer, David, is no. Plant that tray full and utilize every bit of it.
I've even seen some of the commercial guys, they use trays with cells a quarter this size. You know, 500 plants on the same size tray, and they don't ever have any problems with it. So fill up that whole tray. You don't use it all, give it to your neighbor.
Yeah.
Something or other. Make sure you use the whole tray.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week's show, folks. And we will see you guys on next week's show. Have a good one.
And watch out for them zoomies.